And so I wanted to talk to you and get some kind of ideas for directions or your input or thoughts or feelings about what would be the role of a community radio station in something around the ideas of encouraging or building a creative city, you know, having those things happen more and more.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is connecting all of the different energies that we have pursuing creative programming in the greater Spokane area. I think of Terrain. I think of Gonzaga's Visiting Writers Series. I think of the visiting writers that come to Spokane Falls Community College, the Visiting Artist Series that they have there. I think of the MAC. And, you know, there are all these great little islands. And sometimes there are bridges between those islands, but oftentimes it seems as if there isn't a lot of shared discourse about the different things that are going on that bring those, you know, to bring those communities together. At Gonzaga right now, we're trying to launch a Center for the Public Humanities, and that was something I was kind of spearheading last year. We had a task force that was exploring it, and it stunned me. One of the chores I was charged with in the fall was to do an inventory of everything that was already going on. And there was a lot going on.
At Gonzaga. Okay.
And so it was at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And so I got this inventory of everything that was going on, and I went, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, we're already doing so much, but we're not doing a good job making one another aware of what we're doing, and even more troubling, we're not doing a good job making the community aware of all these opportunities to take advantage of what Gonzaga has to offer. Now, I mention Gonzaga because I'm familiar with it, of course, but I think it's representative of how the arts and the humanities in communities writ large often exist. There are all these little isolate pockets of energy doing great things, but there's not often synergy between them. Think if we could coordinate a visiting artists series at SFCC with the visiting writer series at Gonzaga with some public installation that's happening at the Saranac, and have all of those entities working together with some kind of culminating event. Way more effective than the one-off one-time events that we often, kind of have happen. Even something as great as Terrain that generates so much, interest. It's still kind of a one-time affair, even though they're now little mini events over the course of the year. I don't know that that's as valuable. And so, I think that a radio station can function as a connector. Between all those groups, through bringing people from the different groups in to talk with one another, talk on the air and reach a public, and share that dialogue. And I know you guys do some of that stuff already, I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. You have a lot of great programs that talk about poetry, that talk about the arts, that talk about literature, film. So I think that that's cool. I don't know if there's any way, to somehow, we saw the young woman come up to the door a few minutes ago, maybe get even younger people involved, because in my mind, right now, the kind of rhetorical model that's getting inflicted on kids very early in the educational system is that the arts don't matter and the humanities don't matter. It's all science. It's all math. And those things are important. Downgrading those. But I think that creativity has always been recognized as integral to the sciences and to math, and it's not being emphasized as integral anymore. And so I was thrilled yesterday. I had to go, and move in my office, and I was talking with my chairperson, and she just got back from some conference, and she was talking about how there are now math departments that are acquiring minors in one of the humanities. And I thought, okay, it's people are starting to get it that none of these pursuits exist in a vacuum. And so interdisciplinary dynamics, I think are really important. And that maybe is another, just a kind of tertiary thread of the, connecting different communities. But, I think that you've got a great opportunity to bring in people who pursued creativity in different forms, architects, and engineers, poets, musicians. And I love listening to people talk about how the human mind is pushing at the boundaries of those different disciplines, and then hearing echoes of how figuring out the design of a park is like figuring out how a poem might work. And it makes I find that really exciting, and it makes me think, okay, all these disciplines are really connected, and that energy is great. And I think one thing, I've been in Spokane for 17 years now. I lived here a couple of years in the early 90s also, so I've lived almost 20 years in Spokane total. But since I've come back in 99, we've had a few little bumps where creativity seems to be emphasized. Davenport Arts District was, kind of blossoming for a while. But I think we're in a real great wave right now, and it's wonderful to see the city council approving, the increase in the Spokane Arts Commission budget few months back was great. We need to do a lot more. I think the increase from $80,000 to $240,000 was awesome.
Wow.
But that still is a pittance compared to peer cities that we often compare ourselves to. Tacoma, for example, has nigh upon a million. Boise, just over a million allocated to the arts and their cities, because they recognize that are the most dynamic people want to live in places where artistic programming is happening and where they can participate in making the heart of their city, so to speak. So I don't know if I answered your question, but those are a couple of things come immediately to mind. I think it's especially, in my mind, it's especially important. I was talking about this the other day with a friend of mine. We have access to more information than ever, and our young people probably know more than people ever have through the little blips that they can get off their handheld computers almost instantly. But the depth of that information is stunningly shallow. I think that what's perhaps even more troubling than that is how our reliance on kind of instant information has curtailed our ability to John Keats had a great phrase, to dwell in uncertainty without irritable reaching after fact. I think that dwelling in mystery, dwelling in unknowing, dwelling in uncertainty, kind of living in that, that moment of you don't know quite where you're at, you don't know quite who you are, you don't know who the other is so important to cultivating appreciation of diversity, appreciation of other cultural traditions, etc. And I think that the easy answer dynamic somehow has made us real uncomfortable with that which we don't know. Go out to dinner with people and get a trivia question in the air and see how people start freaking out when they can't reach for their phones to find out who starred in a 1983 sitcom or something, and I think you see a vestige of that. It's all connected in some ways to how bombastic political rhetoric has become, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think the more we cultivate mystery, the more we cultivate open, generous communities, and the arts and creativity are the route to making that happen.
So that's one of the things that I talked to our board about a month ago, and was giving them an overview of the idea of creative cities, the positive effects it has on communities, and the kinds of things we might consider doing. And that was what I called like the low-hanging fruit. It said, you know, there's already these organizations that exist, like Terrain, like Spokane Arts, you know, the museums around here. There's already established organizations that the first thing we can easily do is be in touch with them constantly, having people on the air talking about what they have going on and helping promote those things by letting the public know that they're going on and being a place, a kind of a hub for information.
And I think that pre-event dialogue is incredibly productive too.
Absolutely.
We had Nikki Finney. She's a National Book Award winner in poetry 3 or 4 years ago to campus. She gave, if you have Google time later today, she gave what John Lithgow described as the most stunning acceptance speech in the history of acceptance speeches when she won the National Book Award. It literally will give you chills when you watch it. It's just very moving when she talks about the ghosts of her African-American foreparents in the room. But we had her to campus, and I'm kind of recognizing that.
Okay, hold on to your
thoughts.
Okay, yeah. Tell me who it is.
Nikki, Nikky Finney, Finney, and her National Book Award acceptance speech. It's stunning. So we had her to campus, and you know, we're not great at this at Gonzaga, but it's something that I'm really aware we need to work on. But we had two or three events before she arrived. We had one where we invited five or six poets, some and spoken word poets, and an academic who was familiar with Finney's work and how it fit into the history of African-American literature. And we gave everyone 4 or 5 minutes, and we had about a 45-minute time slot during lunch. So we had creative readings. We had the little mini lecture, and it was a wonderful pre-event. Because it got, and then we had a couple, three people reading some of Finney's poems, and so it really you know, primed the well and made it so people didn't just show up at the event and go, oh wow, that's really cool. They had expectations, they had knowledge, and I think it made it more moving for them. So I mean, I think of that as another dynamic. So for example, we always know the Spokane Reads event that's going to happen at the public library in the fall. I could imagine, you know, three or four people coming on and talking about the author's work, that and pro and con dynamics too. I think that for, you know, it to be really meaningful, it can't just be, wow, this is going to be great. Well, it's going to be great. You know, there needs to be, you know, dialogue and disagreement. But you know, I mean, certainly that's another, connecting way that the radio station could function. You know, I think, a venue for sharing original works, you know, they do, Vern does the you know, the book notes at KPBX, and they read a novel from that. But you can imagine if you know, you cooperated with Carolyn Lamberson at the Spokesman, and you know how over the summer they do those summer stories where they have like Jess Walter and Sharma Shields. So they've only done this 2 or 3 years now, and she has 6 authors for their Sunday, you know, kind of arts and culture page, write an original story. You know, like Sean Vestal's done it, some really great writers. And so they write an original piece, and then the Spokesman publishes it. And, you know, it's been a real big success. Well, why not go one step farther and have those stories read over the air?
Yeah.
I mean, people love, you know, we're in the age of people loving podcasts, love listening to books on tape. And these would be original creative works. And, you know, I'm sure that Carolyn would you know, love to partner on that. I'm doing, you know, I'm always interested in ways to reach different communities that might be interested in the arts. And so I asked Rich Landers if I could do – he's the outdoors writer for the Spokesman. I asked if I could curate a page of nature poetry for him to use on his outdoors page. And so I'm going to get 8 to 10 local and Northwest poets who've written, you know, poems about our region that connect to different visions of nature. And we'll have that in the paper, and that will reach a different audience. And, you know, I think that, you know, that finding different ears for the art is tremendously important for me. When the arts and humanities are just part of university settings and whatnot, then they're dead as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, just as a place to share this work. So I know you do some of that this stuff already, but even more would be great.
That's what I want.
Yeah,
I'm pushing for
and
that.
And original works would be really cool. And Eastern has such a dynamic writing program too. Willow Springs is their arts and literary journal. Comes out 3 times a year. They publish nationally acclaimed writers in it every time it comes out. They always do launch parties. What if one of their launch? You know, what if they tried as a launch party to read a half hour of works from the different edition? You know, different grad student and professor readers. You know, Nance Van Winkle, Sam Ligon, etc. We could get Greg Spatz and his wife to play they have their wonderful fiddle music.
Mighty Swirl.
It could be a fantastic event. The former Washington State Poet Laureate was Elizabeth Austin, and she has been in charge of literary programming on KUOW in Seattle for quite a while now. And I know that they've brought recording equipment out to events at bookstores, events at other venues, and recorded it. And then she's gone and put it into production and edited it and cleaned it up and added some commentary and made some wonderful kind of mini podcast programs from that. And I think that doesn't sound too daunting to me. And I mean, that could be a wonderful archive of material that you guys could have and produce for the community. Sherman comes over so much, recording Sherman Alexi in Spokane, and being able to share that, I think would be pretty cool. We had Marilyn Robinson up here for the Gonzaga Visiting Writer Series last year, and she's a likely Nobel Prize winner in the next. It was hilarious. Right before she came up, I thought, I think she might be in the running for the Nobel Prize. And so I actually looked online, and there's a website a betting website that keeps track of the people's odds to win the Nobel Prize mm-hmm. each year. And she's at 20-1, which is actually one of the best odds that you can find on there. So. We had her to town, and we did at Gonzaga. We're really dysfunctional about recording things and whatnot. We have an on campus video and recording production branch of the IT department, but they charge us. So the departments that want to do it will get charged in order to do it, and that's because their resources are so tapped. But I can't afford to pay $150 an hour to record our visiting writers when they come. But there are so many great writers that come to Antes. Antes would allow that to happen, and I imagine that you guys could do that mm-hmm. every now and then. I mean, it could be and the same thing holds true of the artist lectures that the MAC holds. There's so many. I especially think about it in terms of voices that won't be with us, that much longer. Ruben Trejo that passed away a few years back. It'd be great to get a recording of him talking about his artistic process and stuff. So, I think that creating a digital archive is something that. I think it would be pretty awesome.
And we're all about the audio because we're yeah. radio. So
yeah.
All of those things are perfect opportunities for us.
Yeah.
And as a station, I think that's what we want to do. These are the types of things we want to do, and that's why I wanted to have you come by and just, whatever ideas that you could think of that would be yeah. things we could consider doing.
Well, one thing I'm doing this fall that kind of fits in, I'm doing a number of programs at Spokane Public and Spokane County Libraries, and I got this idea from this wonderful poet, Michael Dylan Welch, who's over in Redmond, and he just goes to the public library and does a 10-minute, 15-minute intro to Walt Whitman, or 10-15-minute intro to Langston Hughes, or 10-15, these poets that most people kind of know of, but maybe they don't know that much about. So a real kind of general audience one. And then people are invited to read their favorite Walt Whitman poem, or Langston mm-hmm. Hughes poem, or a poem inspired by it. And I think what events like that show is, you know, all those myths connected about connected to how poetry is incredibly forbidding and keeps people out are things that get brutalized into us in high school when teachers with weird power trips want to make us think poems are riddles and we've got to figure them out, and you know, in order to get a smiley face, that we got to get the hidden deep meaning or else we're idiots.
And there's only one meaning.
And there's only one meaning, and I'm the teacher and I know it. You know, right, all those right. things that just steer people away from poetry and the arts and mystery. And then, you know, and through making it more than just, you know, me talking about it, you know, the poet for a little bit, people can get up and read their own poems or their favorite poems by these people. You know, one of the kind of forerunners in that arena was, Robert Pinsky, who was the United States Poet Laureate in the 90s. And he did this favorite poem project, that is archived at Library of Congress. And, he did literally hundreds, maybe thousands, I can't remember for sure now, of recordings going around the country, you know, where he'd roll into a Freda. And, that, you know, they'd find people who would say, yeah, I have a favorite poem by Robert Frost. And they'd read it or they'd recite it, and then they'd talk and they'd film them. These were all videography, but they could be just audio too. And they talk about why that poem meant something to them. And it's an amazing archive of how creativity and the arts shape and affect people, you know, for whom we might not have that initial impulse that you know, poet X matters to. You know, a tractor store salesman in a Freda. But creativity matters to everybody, or else you're living, you know, in I think a pretty, I don't, you know, a pretty painful life. So
tell me something in your, what you think, your thoughts about why this, the idea of creative cities is important. Like, why is it important for Spokane?
Well, I think Spokane as a particular place is really challenging to think about because there are so many Spokane-Seattle issues that come, you know, so quickly to mind. People, you know, there's so much insecurity in Spokane connected to Seattle. And I strongly prefer Spokane to Seattle, having had to go to Seattle so many times in the last year. But putting all that aside for a minute, you know, I think Spokane, well, one of my favorite one-liners about Spokane, Jess, I think, is the one that first told it to me, Jess Walter. He said, Spokane is a blue-collar city with no industrial base. And, you know, what that announces, I think, first and foremost to me is it's a town who's it's a city that's still a little bit unsure of its identity. And I think emphasizing creativity and the arts as a primary driving force in a city allows the forging of an identity, and it might be the forging of an identity that is constantly in flux, which in my opinion it should be, but at least it's a you know, a new articulation, and it's one that the community can take ownership of, you know, rather than always glancing backwards at the, you know, the timber and mining extraction industries that started the city, or, you know, closed Kaiser, or, you know, the impact of the coals over the decades of the 20th century. We can be looking forward to what we want Spokane to resonate for you know how we want to resonate with people in the future. That all that history stuff will be part of it. You know, the incredibly rich Native history too. But you know, emphasizing creativity allows you to make rather than just rely on past visions. So. Well, how would you describe the you know, the central economic energy behind Spokane? The medical hub? I mean, it's the largest medical sure. hub, but then what's next? I don't know exactly. We've got all these, you know, divergent economic energies fueling the city, which is fine. You know, in terms of identity, we've tried to yoke it to nature, you know, in the outdoors and stuff. Okay, that makes some sense. But I just got, you know, as I said, I just got back from this backpack, and we were, you know, pretty far back in the Frank Church, and we're coming upon wintering grounds for the Nez Perce, and there are petroglyphs on the walls of the canyons and caves. And you realize that, you know, and what always kind of stuns me about those is, you know, I can make a stick figure, but, you know, there's a little bit more aesthetic flair in those drawings than just a simple stick figure. I mean, you can tell that this is both a recording of history, a recording of information that's important, you know, where's a good hunting spot, et cetera. But, you know, there's also a little bit of the artist going into it. And, you know, that to me, it, you know, is a great example of a first, creative city, creative community. You know, the art was at the center of these places where people gathered. And that's been the case for a long, long, long time. And that's how it should be. You know, I think that with Spokane going forward, that's what we've got to figure out, what that artistic heart is going to look like. What are the rhythms with which it's going to beat? And I don't think we've done that yet, but I think that the patient is alive and well.
I think that it's something that people want, and I appreciate hearing that from you, that you think there's kind of a wave of that going on, because what I'm really starting to feel, and that's why I think it's such an important time for us to get in there and help, you know, so that doesn't crest and go back down.
I know.
Keep that going.
You know? I know. We've got Get Lit in the spring. We've got so many. I mean, I tend to continually emphasize the literature events because those are, you know, straight within my province. But we've got, you know, good energies in the visual arts. You know, the Richmond Art Collective, I think is a real cool thing. Over the Bartlett is a great music venue. I love that place. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 years ago, and the Big Dipper's back. You know, so I mean, there are all these cool things, and it's good to see. You know, you don't want that to fade. You know, I think there are a lot of problematic aspects in my mind. This is, I'm slipping into editorializing a little bit, but with the Kendall Yards West Central, you know, boundaries and whatnot. But Kendall Yards is certainly bringing some great energy through Spark, you know, fantastic art outreach center, and I think that'll help them navigate, if not, hopefully integrating with a neighborhood with which there are such, you know, tremendous economic disparity that it, you know, it's a little troubling to me, but hopefully they can figure that out and make it make it a community rather than two communities with a dividing road,
right?
Which no one ever wants to see that. You know, I like to see them connect with one another. But I mean, just that whole isn't just a waste field anymore is pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, there's lots of cool stuff going on.